Good morning. It is Kale and Company live here on WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com. Great to have you with us on this Monday morning, not just any Monday morning, as we'll find out, and I'm sure you probably know. Kale and Company, presented by Northeast Delta Dental. Northeast Delta Dental has individual and family plans designed to fit your lifestyle. You can learn more and find your plan at DeltaDentalCoversMe.com. And we are delighted on this Monday morning to be joined by Amanda Leith, who is the education coordinator at the McAuliffe Shepherd Discovery Center in Concord at 2 Institute Drive. And Amanda, welcome. Great to have you with us.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to be on your show today.
Well, thank you, Amanda, and I'm excited to have you on, and I know our listeners are as well, because it is a very special day, one that has been talked about for years and years, and I know the folks at the McAuliffe Shepherd Discovery Center have been working on and talking about this and getting ready for today for a couple of years now.
Absolutely. It's a really exciting day, something we've been looking forward to for a while, as you said. So we're really looking forward to getting into the activities and welcoming our visitors to join us today for lots of observing and preparations for the eclipse.
Yeah, a total solar eclipse will take place in just hours from now. So, Amanda, tell us, what is so special about a total solar eclipse?
Absolutely. Total solar eclipses are extremely rare, especially for them to happen on this path crossing over New Hampshire. So the path of totality, which is where you're going to see that total eclipse happening, is only about 100 miles wide on average. So a very thin band of the United States, Mexico, and Canada are going to be able to see this. Now, the last time we had a total solar eclipse that passed through New Hampshire was back in 1959. And the next one that we are going to have is not going to be until 2079. So we are in a really exciting period of time for us here in our state to be able to witness an event like this.
Well, I won't make it to the 2079 event. I can guarantee you that. I hate to say it, but I was around for that previous one in 1959. And tell us, Amanda, what is going to take place today at the Discovery Center?
Yeah, absolutely. So we are going to have an event both indoors and outside for visitors that want to come and join us. Indoors, we are going to have a variety of activities that are going to be related to the eclipse, so helping us learn not only why eclipses happen, but why they are so rare, even for us here on Earth compared to other planets in our solar system. Outdoors, we're going to have a few activities as well with some observing, telescopes, binoculars, and other ways to view it. For anyone that wants to join us, everything outdoors is going to be completely free. We're also going to have some eclipse viewers for anyone that wasn't able to get some, for anyone that joins us today. But everything indoors, you can just get a general admission ticket. We have lots of really fun things going on, and we're hoping to have a really good crowd today.
Well, I'm sure you will. I know that many thousands have descended upon the northern part of New Hampshire. Is that in actuality where the best opportunity to see totality will be today in that area?
Yes, everything north of Lancaster is going to experience totality. So everything in Coos County, everything in the North Country above the White Mountains is going to have that totality. But for anyone else that can't make it up there, we're going to have at least 94% coverage from all the way down in the bottom of the state up to totality. So we're going to have a really great view no matter where you are in the state, but definitely totality is the place to be if you have that opportunity.
So how important, I know many people will be focused on it, and how important is it that we protect our eyes properly and wear those special glasses?
It is extremely important. I'm sure everyone growing up was told by their parents to never look at the sun. That is great advice for any day of the week, but especially during eclipses. So as everyone knows, like, the sun produces a lot of energy, and our eyes are shaped very similarly to magnifying glasses. So if you've ever taken a magnifying glass and used the sun to kind of like burn a hole in a piece of paper and things like that, that is the same thing that's going to happen to the backs of your eyes if you were to look at the sun, even when it's covered 98%. So that small amount of radiation and energy that's coming off the sun can still damage your eyes very much.
How can we expect our animals to react? Will the animals have a reaction to this at all?
Definitely in totality, there will be some reactions. NASA is actually doing a study called the Eclipse Soundscape all across the country, where they're sending out microphones to hear how local ecology is going to react. But most of the time, what you'll see is birds will kind of stop chirping. Owls might come out. Crickets might start chirping. But for our everyday animals, it shouldn't impact them too much. Obviously, they don't look at the sun every day. They don't know what an eclipse is, so they shouldn't be looking at the sun today. But if you are in the path of totality, that's where it's going to be the most prominent. Everywhere else, since it's not going to get quite as dark, there will be less of a reaction.
So what is the timetable? When should we start seeing the effects of the total eclipse?
Yeah, so the eclipse for all of New Hampshire is going to start right around 2:15 in the afternoon. That is what we call first contact, so when the moon starts to go across the sun. It's going to last in that way about an hour and 15 minutes until maximum. For everyone that is south of the White Mountains, we are going to see maximum at around 3:30. But for totality, you're going to have about a minute, minute and a half worth of darkness. So that is when the moon is completely covering the sun. You'll be able to see the solar corona, or the outer layer of the sun's atmosphere. And it will be completely dark. You'll see stars in the daytime, even a couple of planets, and maybe even a comet while we are looking. But again, that's only going to last for about a minute, minute and a half before the moon slowly recedes off the other side of the sun, leaving us with a nice partial eclipse for the rest of the time until about 4:45.
Okay, so when is totality, little after 3, you said?
Around 3:30.
3:30, okay, mm-hmm. So we'll make a note of that. And now, Amanda, if you could be anywhere today to see this, other than the McAuliffe Shepherd Discovery Center in Concord, if you could be anywhere else, where would it be?
I think I would be in northern Maine today. It looks like out of the entire country, northern Maine is going to have the best possible weather to see this eclipse. So they are projecting 0% cloud cover, which is awesome. But as you get further away into the southern parts of our country, it's definitely going to be a little bit more dicey for clouds and storms.
Well, Amanda, we certainly appreciate you taking some time out of your busy day to talk about the event that most of us, probably all of us, will never have an opportunity to see again in our lifetimes. And we certainly appreciate you taking the time from the McAuliffe Shepherd Discovery Center, where the activities begin at what time today?
12 o'clock.
12 o'clock. Well, it's going to be an exciting day, and I thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
All right. Thanks, Amanda. Amanda Leith, the education coordinator at a great place in Concord, the McAuliffe Shepherd Discovery Center, which is located at 2 Institute Drive, right next to, right on the campus, really, of the New Hampshire Technical Institute in Concord. Very easy to get to. And again, the festivities for this once-in-a-lifetime, for many experience, the total solar eclipse, is going to start at noontime today. And I'm just looking on their website right now, www.starhop.com, that as of 2:30 on the 6th of April, that was Saturday, they are sold out of eclipse glasses. So that was as of 2:30 on Saturday. As a matter of fact, I picked up mine maybe a couple of hours earlier than that on Saturday, and I know that they were going as like the proverbial hotcakes, as they say, people buying the glasses. They were $3 a piece. I don't know if they're available anywhere else, but Amanda did say that if you attend the event today, that they will have some for you. So there you go, and it should be a great time. They've been planning this occasion for years now at the McAuliffe Shepherd Discovery Center in Concord. So check it out. And thousands, as you know, have descended on the state of New Hampshire getting ready for this event that will not be happening again until, I think she said, 2000. And 79. So for many of us, This will be our final opportunity to get a look, or at least a glance, at a total solar eclipse. And I guess totality is going to be at about 3:30 this afternoon.
And hopping on a moon shadow, moon shadow, moon shadow. And if I ever lose my hands, lose my plow, lose my
oh yeah, Cat Stevens, moon shadow. I think he goes by Yusef Lateef now or something like that.
I won't have to work no
followed by a moon shadow.
And if I
today's the day, folks. Total eyes, solar eclipse.
My colors all run.
Thanks again to Amanda Leith of the McAuliffe Shepherd Discovery Center in Concord. Their festivities will begin around noontime today. More coming up right here. WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com. Kale and Company Live, WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com, presented by Northeast Delta Dental. And joining us is a gentleman who joined us last week live in studio, and that would be the maestro himself, John Leahy. John, welcome back.
Ken, thanks so much. Great to be here with you.
Of course, John was supposed to be performing at the Bank of New Hampshire stage last Wednesday, but unfortunately, weather interfered with that, and that entire open mic night had to be canceled. But they're going to make it up, and John is going to return, John, on the 1st of May? Is that the date? The big date?
May 1st, so a great way to open the month with some music.
No doubt about that. We're going to be playing some music on the show today. We just heard from Cat Stevens, or Yusef, as he's called himself for a number of years now, and Moon Shadow, and we have other moon and sun related songs still to come here on WKXL this morning as we commemorate the total solar eclipse. Are you going to be witnessing that, John?
I don't know, Ken. I'm going to be on the road, so I may not have a choice but to observe it. You might want to think about playing a Jimmy Buffett song, Everlasting Moon.
Everlasting Moon. There you go. Well, maybe we can dig that one out, dust it off a little bit here at WKXL. But John did not come here to talk about the eclipse. He is talking about something that is going to be happening later this week, and that's the NCAA Frozen Four, when the four top collegiate hockey teams will get together in St. Paul, Minnesota, to compete for the national championship, overshadowed by the basketball tournaments that are going on, the women's and men's. Of course, the women's now is all over. Men's championship will be decided tonight between UConn and Purdue. And then on Thursday, the semifinals. And, John, I actually did see, watching the women's final yesterday, I actually did see a promo for about 5 seconds for the Frozen Four that's going to be on ESPN2.
Yeah, I can't wait till Thursday, Ken. It's going to be the culmination of what has been a historic season in college hockey. And obviously I'm proud to say that there are two Hockey East teams that have reached the Frozen Four. BU and Denver will play at 5 o'clock, and BC and Michigan will play at 8:30. But, you know, I absolutely agree with you. I think that college hockey doesn't get the just due it deserves. There are a lot of people in college hockey circles that understand the importance of it. But I really wish that it did get more of the recognition that it deserves. But it's going to be a tremendous, tremendous event. And it's happening at the Xcel Energy Center in St. Paul, Minnesota, home of the Minnesota Wild, and I can't wait till Thursday gets there.
You know, it is a huge event for Hockey East. I mean, as you mentioned, with two representatives from Hockey East. As a matter of fact, the number one seed, the Boston College Eagles, and the number two seed, the Boston University Terriers. It could wind up, I think, John, it would be unprecedented, wouldn't it, an all-Boston final?
Yeah, to my memory, I don't think that's ever happened before. But BU and BC are going to have their hands full just to get to this final. BU playing a Denver team that has been terrific all season long. Denver's won the last four meetings against BU. The Terriers haven't beaten the Pioneers since Halloween night in 2015. They haven't played each other since 2017. And in the BC-Michigan matchup, they'll be meeting for the first time since 2014.
Wow.
And they last met in the NCAA tournament back in 2004, a game which BC won in overtime by a score of 3-2. And Ken, the unique thing about this Frozen Four is that all four coaches in the Frozen Four are alums of the teams that they're coaching.
That is unique. That is very unique. That may be even more unique than two Boston teams potentially making it into the championship game. But you mentioned Denver. They'll be facing off against BU at 5 o'clock. They had a tough time in Springfield against UMass. They had to go to double overtime to beat the Minutemen.
Yeah, I was expecting a close game, and I was expecting UMass to give everything they had. And I had a chance to read Greg Carvel's comments post-game, and he was extremely proud of the effort that UMass gave. So, you know, kudos also to the UMass fans who helped to fill up the Mass Mutual Center. It was a great environment. And Denver got the lucky bounce to win it, but certainly UMass gave them all they could handle.
No question about that. And Quinnipiac, the defending national champion, gave Boston College all it could handle in the second round of the tournament.
Yeah, BC never had a lead in that game until Jack Malone won it in overtime. But, yeah, Quinnipiac, I said from the beginning they were going to be a very difficult out. The defending champions pushed Boston College to the limit, and I know BC coach Greg Brown anticipated that was going to be the case. But great, great effort by Quinnipiac, another great season, and I know that the Bobcats are disappointed they fell short, but they could be proud of the season that they had.
Well, it's great to have two Hockey East teams in the tournament, and there's no doubt about that. BC and BU, the Battle of Commonwealth Avenue. You know, they've played it out for many years, meeting in the bean pod and during the regular season. It's always a bitter, bitter rivalry between the Eagles and the Terriers, and here a national championship on the line. And, you know, it'd just be great. I mean, I would love to see a BC-BU final, and I think certainly a lot of people in this area are rooting for that. I know you are, John Leahy, no doubt about it.
Yeah, as someone who's seen these two teams play all year, I think it would be just a dynamic final. When you consider, you know, BC and BU are going to lose a lot of the talent from this year. I think BC is going to lose three or four of those stud top forwards they have. And, of course, Macklin Celebrini of BU, he's directly headed to the NHL. But, you know, if it does wind up being the Eagles and the Terriers, you're going to see a special hockey game, and you won't want to miss it.
Yeah, folks, tune in. ESPN2 for all the coverage Thursday at 5 and 8:30. And the championship game on Saturday, and that's going to be 6 o'clock. So early enough, for sure, for folks to watch and just see how intense it is. I mean, you know, people always talk about, you know, the Stanley Cup playoffs. You know, this is really on a par with that in terms of excitement and, you know, It just is very intense because every minute, every goal counts. And just, John, I don't think you can match the intensity of postseason hockey.
No, you can't. And I will guarantee that the city of Boston is going to be well represented in terms of the fans that travel out to Minnesota for this Frozen Four. BC and BU normally travel well. And I think you're going to see a whole lot of Boston fans representing both schools out in Minnesota. And I think that's going to be wonderful to see. I wish I could be there. But ESPN will have all the footage, and you're going to want to check it out. It's going to be a weekend to remember.
I do remember a time, John Leahy, when two New Hampshire teams were in it. It was 1979 at the old Detroit Olympia. And both UNH and Dartmouth were in the NCAA. I don't even know if they called it the Frozen Four at that time in 1979, but they both were there at the Detroit Olympia. Both, unfortunately, lost in the first round. And they met in the consolation game that year. And the winner of that tournament was Minnesota, coached by Herb Brooks.
Wow.
In 1979.
Yeah, that's special. I know UNH has had experiences with the Frozen Four. I remember the championship game they played against Maine out in Anaheim. And I know our good buddy Pete Webster had a chance to call that game. So, you know, I'm a big rooter of Hockey East. To get to this tournament, we're blessed to have two teams in it this year. So I'm really looking forward to Thursday.
All right. Well, John, we appreciate your expertise all season long, and hopefully we'll get a chance to catch up following the championship game on Saturday.
Ken, I always look forward to it. Enjoy the eclipse and be safe out there.
All right. Thanks, John. Enjoy it. John Leahy, Hockey East guru right here, WKXL. Here's Jonathan Edwards and Sunshine. As we get ready for the total solar eclipse today. Totality, they say, around 3:30 this afternoon. So we'll be looking forward to that. But don't look at the sun, the moon, without those special glasses. And I don't know where you can get them now, except for showing up at the big event at the McAuliffe Shepherd Discovery Center, which begins today at noontime. Sunshine. Jonathan Edwards right here, WKXL. Back to talk some baseball right after these words. NHTalkRadio.com. We're presented by Northeast Delta Dental. Welcome back. Kale & Company live here on WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com. Great to have you with us. We're presented by Northeast Delta Dental, and on the day we celebrate the 50th anniversary of Hank Aaron passing Babe Ruth on the all-time home run list, we're going to talk about Pete Rose here on the show and the new book out, Charlie Hustle, The Rise and Fall of Pete Rose and the Last Glory Days of Baseball. Our guest is the author of this incredibly researched book, Keith O'Brien. Keith, good morning. Great to have you with us.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Well, it is our pleasure. And first of all, the nickname and the title of the book, Charlie Hustle. I think our listeners will be surprised to hear where that nickname came from.
Yeah, so it's a name that's given to him by Mickey Mantle and Whitey Ford on the Yankees. The Yankees are playing the Reds in spring training 1963. Mantle and Ford see this kid rookie nobody Pete Rose playing with this reckless abandon, and they give him this name. There's a couple things that we don't know though. The first is it's not intended to be a compliment. They're essentially laughing at Pete Rose. He's playing so hard. He's trying so hard that Mantle and Ford, frankly, find it absurd. So it's not intended to be a compliment. It's essentially a jab at him. And the other thing we don't really know is the exact name they used. In the days afterwards, in the newspapers, some said that they called him Henry Hustle. Some said they called him the Charlie Hustler. It's only after a number of days that they settle on the story that it was Charlie Hustle.
Charlie Hustle, and he's been known by that ever since. And you talked with so many that knew Pete Rose best, the players who played with and against him, writers and broadcasters who covered him, women in his life, even the man who investigated him, in the 1980s, John Dowd, and even Pete himself for a while anyway. When did the project begin, Keith?
Yeah, I started my research for the book in the summer of 2021. So nearly 3 years ago, and yeah, I did get access to Pete Rose for a while. He did grant me 27 hours of interviews before he stopped calling me back, before he shut down. And then I don't know what happened. We did not have a falling out. We did not have a contentious conversation. But, you know, I was pushing Pete, and I think maybe I just pushed him as far as he could go.
Well, let's talk about his upbringing a little bit. Pete's dad, Pete Rose Sr., was a storied athlete in Cincinnati. Their relationship wasn't always the best.
Well, Pete's father, Harry Francis Rose, or better known as Big Pete, you know, was, as you said, a very accomplished athlete in his own right. He was a prominent football player on the west side of Cincinnati in the 1930s and 40s, you know, at a time when there was no football team in the city, you know, no professional team.
Right.
The Cincinnati Bengals wouldn't come to exist for many more decades. So, you know, Pete's father really is fixated on the fact that his son will also become an athlete and become a famous one. And, you know, the son, P. Rose, the little Pete, he internalizes everything his father says. He worships his father, frankly, and P. Rose would use that word. But you know, his father is a hard man. He's driving him to have this success. He's laser focused on it, and I think that was you know, hard for lots of people. It was, and gave Pete Rose, you know, really only one thing to do in life, and that was to succeed on the field.
Yeah, and what was it like for Rose and the city of Cincinnati when he made the team's opening day roster in 1963?
Well, it's crucial for Pete Rose. You know, we know, of course, he's going to go on and set the all-time hit record, but he's going to need every season he can get to do that. And in 1963, when he makes the big league roster, it's a surprise. Pete Rose has jumped at the line. He's moved in front of three guys who are in front of him. So it's a surprise. It's important, you know, because Pete has gone and taken a job from a beloved teammate named Don Blasingame. His own teammates don't like him very much, but it's a big deal in Cincinnati because P. Rose was a native son and born and raised on the west side. And when he makes the team in 63, it's a homecoming for him.
Yeah, no doubt about that. So at what point did the gambling begin?
Well, we all know that Pete Rose is going to, you know, be banned from baseball in 1989 for his gambling on his own games, his own team. My reporting makes clear that his relationships with bookies, his dealings with bookies, his gambling goes back at least, you know, 20 years earlier into the early 1970s. And, you know, at that time he's, you know, betting with a bookie named Al Esselman on the west side of Cincinnati. And Al Esselman is, you know, a local guy, a west side guy, a friend of the family. He's not going to hurt Pete Rose. He's not going to, you know, report him to the authorities for gambling. He happily carries Pete's debts at times. But over the years, you know, Pete bets with lots of different bookies, and some of them aren't as friendly as Al Esselman. You know, some of them will not protect Pete, and for that reason, Pete's going to go down in 1989.
Yeah, he sure did. And you write of his spring trainings in Tampa, his triple headers, going to the horse track, the dog track, and then a little highlight to wrap it up.
Yeah. Well, it's spring training in the 60s and 70s and 80s. You know, a lot of players like to go to the dog track at night. That was a hopping baseball scene. Lots of famous players, star players would be there. But Pete did like to go to extremes in his personal life in particular. And he did like to do, as he called them, the triple headers, hit all three in a single night.
Well, let's talk about one of the most famous incidents involving Pete Rose, the 1970 All-Star Game. He and Ray Fosse had dinner the night before with a number of other people. And the next night, in one of the most famous moments in All-Star history, he barreled over Fosse very hard in a home plate collision. Ray Fosse went on to play until 1979, but I know you met with Ray Fosse's widow, and what were her feelings about Pete Rose?
Well, that collision at home plate fundamentally changes things for both men. It is one of these moments that Pete has many times in his life where a single play, a single moment, a single night changes everything for someone else. And this is true for Ray Fosse on this night in July 1970. He will never be the same again. He injures his shoulder in the collision. It's misdiagnosed in the early weeks after the collision. It forever affects his swing. And, you know, the opposite is true for Pete. I think you can make an argument, and I do make the argument, that this is the moment when Pete Rose becomes Pete Rose, this collision. I mean, in July 1970, most people had never seen Pete Rose play. You know, the Reds did not play on national TV in the 1960s very often. They weren't in the World Series. Pete Rose had not had a moment like this on stage this big. And so this collision really does make Pete Rose the icon that he will come to be.
Keith O'Brien is our guest, author of Charlie Hustle, The Rise and Fall of Pete Rose, and The Last Glory Days of Baseball. Keith, can you stay with us for a few more minutes?
Sure.
Yep. All right. And we will be back. We'll hear a little Frank Sinatra, Fly Me to the Moon, on this day of the total eclipse. Back with more right after these words. Kale & Company Live, WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com. We'll be right back.
In other words, please be true. In other words, I love you.
Kale & Company Live right here on WKXL. Great new book out, Charlie Hustle, The Rise and Fall of Pete Rose, and The Last Glory Days of Baseball. The author is a New York Times best-selling author, Keith O'Brien, a native of Cincinnati, and now living in New Hampshire. You saw the light, Keith, huh? And move to Granite State.
I do like living in New Hampshire, yeah.
That is great. How long have you been in New Hampshire?
About 9 years.
Oh, wow. Oh, so you're like a native now.
I don't know about that, yeah. But I've been here for a while now.
Well, were you in Cincinnati when Pete Rose played for the Reds?
Yeah, I'm too young to remember the Big Red Machine years,
right.
But I'm in the wheelhouse for my love of baseball when he traded back to Cincinnati in 1984. I remember exactly where I was in 1985 on the night he set the hit record, and I remember, you know, how it all felt when it fell apart in 1989.
Yeah, exactly. And of course, he was involved in what I think and what many think was the greatest World Series of all time, the 1975 World Series, the Red Sox and the Reds, and it was such an amazing World Series. I mean, it's almost 50 years ago, and as a Red Sox fan, of course, I was disappointed that they lost and couldn't win the World Series. They hadn't won one since 1918 at the time, but that was, and I think Pete appreciated it playing on that great stage in probably the greatest World Series ever.
it's a significant moment in his career. It's obviously his first World Series title after having lost a couple before that. And it is, I think, the most epic World Series in baseball history. In Game 6 and 7 of that series, there's like 75 million people watching the game. I mean, so it's not just that the games were good and the outcomes exciting. People were watching. 75 million Americans tuned in to watch those games.
Well, a lot of big name stars, and I think to this day, Keith, people who don't follow the game that closely think that the Red Sox won that World Series because the only highlight you ever see is the Carlton Fisk walk-off home run in Game 6. So I'm sure a lot of people are left with the impression that the Red Sox won that World Series, but they did not. It was the Reds in 7 in the greatest World Series of all time. Your title is Charlie Hustle, The Rise and Fall of Pete Rose, and The Last Glory Days of Baseball. What do you mean by that, the last glory days of baseball?
I think Pete Rose is now a fault line, a dividing line that separates the past from the present, the age of the heroes from the age of the cheaters. And I want to be clear, I'm not suggesting that players before 1989 were perfect or that they were pure. They weren't. It was the opposite of that. In fact, baseball was very unpolished. It was a raw game. It was a dangerous game. Lots of guys did and said things that they could never get away with today. But the story we were told by the press was one of purity and heroes. I do think that we lost something in 1989. We lost a certain amount of innocence in 1989 when Pete Rose goes down. And, I feel like, since 1989, it just feels like sports has been one scandal and controversy after another.
Oh, it is true. And you had the opportunity to outline the gambling probe in great detail, spoke with two former commissioners, Bud Selig and Faye Vincent, and John Dowd, who investigated Rose, among other investigators that were involved in the probe. What did you learn from your research and talking with these people who were directly involved in the investigation?
Oh my gosh, I learned so much. I mean, there's so much in the book that is new, that pushes the story forward. It would be impossible to summarize in a single answer, but I will say that the thing that I find fascinating is that Pete Rose succeeds as a player and fails as a man for the very same reasons. He becomes an iconic ball player because of how hard he plays, because of the fury he brings to the game, because of his inability to be vulnerable, his refusal to be weak, his refusal to bend, and his belief that he is always going to prevail. He's going to get a hit. He's going to win. These are the things that makes Pete Rose Pete Rose as a player. But they are the exact same qualities that doom him to failure as a man. He's going to go to extremes. He's going to live life with a certain fury. He's going to refuse to bend. He's going to refuse to be vulnerable. And he's going to believe until the very end that he can do anything and get away with it. And about that, he's wrong.
Yeah, he's still around, still making appearances. He was at a baseball dinner in Manchester, New Hampshire, a couple of years ago, and signing autographs there. So he's still making appearances. He's still there, not in the Hall of Fame. Do you think he should be in the Hall of Fame?
One other reason why my book is unique is that I'm not here to make an argument for Pete Rose. I'm not here to make an argument against Pete Rose. And it's not even about the Hall of Fame. I didn't write this book because of that. You know, but of course, I have thought a lot about it. I've thought a lot about Pete Rose, the Hall of Fame. I've thought a lot about how we honor athletes in general. And, you know, I think at this point that we've just lost perspective. We like to put athletes on pedestals and ascribe moral values to them that they may or may not have, may or may not deserve. And the fact is that we don't know that much about them. We simply don't know what we don't know about our athletes. And so, you know, for that reason, I believe that they should be honored or not honored, enshrined or not enshrined, based on what happened on the field. And if what happened off the field is so wrong, then we should put that on their plaque at Cooperstown, I think.
Yeah, I would agree. And the book is fascinating. It's so well researched, just amazing, really and truly. Just one final question. And I know many fans have thought about this for years. What was the relationship like between Pete Rose and Johnny Bench?
Yeah, you know, we not only do we want to put our athletes on pedestals, but we like to think of them as, you know, being friends with their teammates, especially their famous ones. Johnny Bench, obviously one of the great catchers of all time, a future Hall of Famer. But he and Pete have a tense relationship, and it's because of ego.
Yeah.
You know, Pete Rose is from Cincinnati. He's born and raised in Cincinnati. He's a native son. But in a lot of ways, Johnny Bench, you know, represents the city, this conservative Midwestern city, in a way that the city likes. You know, he's Johnny's younger than Pete. He's taller than Pete. He's better looking than Pete. He's more well-spoken than Pete. He has all these things going for him. And Johnny says and does the right thing almost every time, whereas Pete says and does whatever he wants. And, you know, as Johnny becomes famous and indeed one of the best players in the major leagues, you know, it's hard to juggle those two egos in one locker room.
Well, it's a fabulous book, and really, if you're a baseball fan, you'll want to read it. Charlie Hustle, The Rise and Fall of Pete Rose, and The Last Glory Days of Baseball. The author is Keith O'Brien, and Keith, thank you so much for your time this morning. We really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
All right, it is our pleasure. On this day of the total eclipse of the sun, and it's going to take place. Greatest viewing in New Hampshire is the northern part of the state. Thousands upon thousands have flocked there this weekend. The reservations were made a couple of years ago for all the hotels in the area. And as we talked with Amanda Leith from the McAuliffe Shepherd Discovery Center earlier in the program today, the total eclipse is expected around 3:30. This afternoon, and they will have festivities at the Shepherd McAuliffe Discovery Center in Concord starting at noontime today.
It's a marvelous night for a moon dance with the stars up above in your eyes. A fantabulous night to make romance neath the cover of October skies. With all the leaves on the trees are falling to the sound of the breezes that blow. You know I'm trying to please to the calling of your heartstrings that play soft and low. Yet all the night's magic seem to whisper and hush.
You know the well, it's going to be a sky like you've probably never seen before this afternoon. And please, though, don't look without those special glasses. And Amanda mentioned that if you show up today at the McAuliffe Shepherd Discovery Center in Concord, they will have more available. And folks, remember to always look on the bright side of life. Have a great Monday, everyone.